Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Onigiri & Co. podcast. Today I'm with someone that probably was the main reason I started flying FPV once I saw her years ago on Roto Riot. Aww. And it's Zoe FPV.
Hello everybody, I'm Z to the O to the FPV. You may know me as the one that flies 3D. I do a lot of other things, but yeah, I'm excited to be here. I haven't done a lot of podcasts since I've been back in FPV or really much of any content really. So I'm kind of excited to talk to you about all the things.
Yes, I'm excited to see you too. Like even like just selfishly for me, like being able to talk to you.
It's been a while. Like we hung out, what was it, 6-7 years ago for a brief period when you like came down to Monterey, Santa Cruz area.
Yes.
That was fun. It could have been more fun. I feel like it was like awkward. I don't know, I felt so awkward because at the time, and I keep telling my friends this story, and I've told it probably 10 or 15 times, I kept calling Onigiri Onigirl, and I felt horrible about it. I don't know if someone said it and I picked it up, but I started saying Onigirl to Onigiri's face, and I remember you in the back, I think you were in the backseat of a car, and you were telling me, Zoe, no, it's Onigiri, like the Japanese, like, rice dish, and I'm like, oh, I am a massive a-hole. I'm so sorry. And I have felt embarrassed about that for years.
Years. I don't even remember you did it because so many people did it that I'm like, oh, it was my second name anyway. So, and I can't, Oni girl, it's funny because if it was that, Oni in Japanese, I hope I'm not saying something wrong, it's demon. So demon girl, you know, it's quite cool as well.
It's very badass. That's what I thought. I thought it was super badass. Either way. It's a cool name.
That should be my alter ego, you know, Onigiri, and then when I'm angry, it's Onigirl. But anyway, yeah, that's true. It's been a while since we met each other in real life. It was such a good, like, we met two different days. I think the first day it was on your race, like the giant drone race, the X-Class.
Yeah, X-Class race. Yeah, that was at the track too. You got to see one I thought was one of the cooler races we had.
Oh, it is so cool. It is so cool. And at the time with my ex, Kevin, we were so pumped on this. We were like, we want to do this in Australia. But, you know. Like, without getting ahead of topics in the podcast, you know what it is with with regulations. So it's, I don't think it's going to happen. But yeah, and then the second day we went to an abandoned town or something like that. Like, it was full-blown houses and you flew 3D and you almost decapitated us, but not really.
Hey, that was controlled decapitation, okay? I was in complete most control of the time.
Yes, so don't worry. I also almost decapitated people on the trip. So, but yeah, well, you just introduce yourself, I guess. People who I'm sure most of the audience knows you. Do you want to say a little bit more, like maybe how long you've been flying?
Yeah. So the big thing I've noticed since I've been back in FPV, like I left a couple years ago due to like, I don't know, COVID, pandemic, life issues. Like, I lost my job. I was physically not in a good place, like, worse than I've been in a while. Mm-hmm. And before that, though, and I realized since then, a lot of people have gone into FPV and have no clue who I am, which is funny to me. And if they do know me, it's generally for my 3D flying. Like, I'm known as the girl that flies upside down and does stuff upside down. Which is such an oversimplification, but that seems to be the way it is with people. But like, I got my start in FPV over 8 years ago now. And, you know, I won the first ever AMA race in the United States. Mm-hmm. I went on to win like 20 different titles and trophies in my time. Mm-hmm. And I was very hopeful early on that FPV and drone racing in particular is going to be like a paid career for me. But realistically, even for the pilots and the ones at the top end, it is really hard to make just a career out of doing drone racing. And I would say it is nearly impossible still, like almost 10 years on in the industry. So I drifted away from racing. I started focusing on freestyle and X-Class drone racing. Like, I was one of the founders of X-Class back in 2015-16. Mm-hmm. Was a giant drone racing, 800 millimeter, 13 plus inch propellers, you know, basically the center rigs people are flying now, but just racing around with them. And we pushed that for quite a while and it got some traction. And I think it spawned Beast Class and Street League. I think other kind of bigger drone leagues started happening in between that. And it's been really interesting. So I got my start in racing. I found my love for freestyle and 3D flying. And then I wanted to go bigger with X Class. And that's been most of my life in the drone world is innovating, doing new different stuff, and just kind of having fun with this new thing that people still haven't fully figured out. Yeah. Even still, I feel like there's new stuff that's happening all the time within the drone industry that just like, oh, wow, that's cool. What do you mean? You just had two propellers on top of each other and you're doing like micro controls for torque jitter to fucking like, there's insane things happening at university level and even the hobbyist level that make me giddy about the developments. I'm a hobbyist that found my passion for it. And I just continue trying to do things that I love. And honestly, the only things I love in life right now are FPV and FPV.
That's a good thing. I think that's most of us, isn't it?
It's a thing. Like, you become addicted to FPV. It becomes this like life thing, you know, like it's one of the few things that gives you this adrenaline rush, you know. It's an out of body experience. There's nothing else quite like it. Mm-hmm. Like, you can take all the drugs in the world, but you're not going to have the same experience as flying FPV completely sober. So it's kind of a magical thing, and it feels like once you're in it, you're really into it. Mm-hmm. Most of the people I know, if you're in the FPV scene, you're generally in the FPV scene.
Yeah.
And like me, I feel like if you get out of the scene, you kind of drift out for a while. Like, I've noticed there's several people since I've gotten back that have drifted out of FPV since I've been away and then back into FPV. Like, it's almost becoming a seasonal hobby for some people. But yeah. I'm getting off on a tangent.
No. I love tangents. it's so true. You know, when I had to slow down a little bit my flying and things like that, I would still be in the car. And if someone else was driving, or even if I was driving, I'd be looking and I'd be like, oh, that would be such a great spot.
And people,
and I would be with people who are not in the community, and they don't realize like how good that would be, you know. So I was like, that's a good spot. But I have a question that made me realize, I think I never asked you, and I don't think I've heard the answer before. What made you decide to fly 3D, like to fly, you know, the way you do?
That's a great question. I legitimately don't know if anyone's ever asked me that. That's weird. This is going back to 2015. Drone Nationals hadn't happened yet. The first AMA race had just happened, and I just donated my rig to the AMA Museum. The first machine of FPV ever in the AMA Museum is mine, which is freaking amazing. I love it.
It is.
And then Final Glides and Steels are also like right by my side, which is really, really cool too.
Nice.
The competition was coming up for Drone Nationals 2015. And it was like the first freestyle competition that I had ever heard of happening. And it was invite only at the time. And I had gotten an invite because I had been flying freestyle. And before the competition, I'd been playing around a little bit with 3D mode. And at the time, 3D flying was not a thing. There were no 3D propellers. There was very shit, quote unquote, support for it comes to firmware and software and everything else. Mm-hmm. And it was complete dog trash. And it was not something that should have existed. But I wanted it to exist because I was thinking, like, in every other RC hobby, you know, you have 3D helicopters. Well, they came after normal people just flying around model helicopters. Mm-hmm. You have 3D planes, you know, the acrobatic version of, you know, yank and bang flyers. Mm-hmm. So, like, in my mind, there was always this, there's an evolution in RC, and it generally goes from yank and bang flying around chill to 3D. Mm-hmm. And in FPV, 3D is bidirectional thrust, like a 3D helicopter. And so I went down this like pathway of studying Alan Sabot Jr. And Curtis Youngblood and all these like amazing 3D heli pilots. And no one was really doing mini quad 3D. Like, the closest thing there was on the market was Curtis Youngblood Jr. and his father with the Stingray 500, which is a coaxial 3D quadcopters that had four individual rotors, mm-hmm. all powered by one motor, and it would like change the blades based on like a 3D helicopter.
Okay.
And it was cool, but it didn't have the same power or oomph as like a 5-inch mini quad, and it didn't have the same power as a 3D helicopter. But it was a really cool concept, and it was its own thing. And then I was thinking, okay, can we do this with like a regular drone with regular like parts? And BL Heli actually started out, like a lot of people use BL Heli ESCs. It started out with 3D helicopters. That was, BL Heli was for helicopters, heli mm-hmm. helicopters. Mm-hmm. And then it kind of transformed more into the range of, you know, 3D / regular drone racing ESCs. Like the firmware kind of shifted over time. But in that firmware was bidirectional mode, and the original version of it was absolutely horrible. Did not work very good. The hardware was absolutely horrible. The motors were horrible. There's no 3D propellers for it. Like, I was taking HQ props and hot knifing them to flatten out the blades. Jeez. To get rid of the bend in them.
Yeah.
And they exploded instantly. Like, if you looked at those propellers, they were like glass nylon, I think. They just exploded. It was very difficult to get into. And I was doing it because I saw it as like, that's where it needed to go. Mm-hmm. And if I wasn't going to do it, someone was going to do it. Mm-hmm. And if I got it working right, then I'm going to have an advantage / like a leg up on other freestyle pilots, because I'm doing that next level shit. Like, when everyone else is flying foamies around the air, I'm going to be that motherfucker doing the 3D shit. That's going to be next level.
Yes.
The only issue is the hardware and everything else at the time was complete dog trash. So it was basically like tying a fucking, like, you know, arm behind my back while flying. So it was more of a detriment than like an added benefit. Mm-hmm. So it was a risk. It failed initially, horribly so, but I kept at it because I saw a spark to it. Like, I knew this was like the path I wanted to take. And sure enough, like 5 years later, it started getting really good. And now, today, with Betaflight 4.5 coming out soon, I'm so excited. Mm-hmm. Having a custom 3D preset. So I'll be able to go into Betaflight 4.5, type in 3D in the preset thing, find my preset, hit a couple buttons, and boom, it'll just work. Everything will be set up. 3D mode will be buttery smooth. Just set up your ESCs with bidirectional mode, and you're good to go. So like the ease of use, I'm so glad has gotten better, but like, and it's so much better now. Like, when you used to fly 3D and you would quote unquote transition, which is going from positive negative throttle, the motor has to go from full positive one way to full negative the other way.
Yes.
And that means going from like 25,000 RPM to negative 25,000 RPM in the matter of about 100 milliseconds, right? So you're just dumping power into that motor, dumping power into the ESC, and you're asking a lot from your hardware to do that.
Yeah.
And at the time, it was asking too much of the hardware because you'd constantly have desyncs, the machine would not catch itself, you'd have motors going everywhere. Like, it was not a good time, and it performed like dog shit. It looked like dog shit. And honestly, I think 3D got a bad rap because it was definitely more gimmicky than it was like, you know, an added extension of your flight ability like it is now. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel very confident that 3D on my 5-inch is at a place that will make most people that fly 700 millimeter 3D helicopter go, oh, okay, this is nice. But it took going to 6L, having proper motors, having custom propellers, having, you know, 60 amp ESCs with F7, having a Betaflight developer help me tune things out. Like, there's a lot of love and care that's gone into taking it from the dog trash that I had and wanted and started out with to where it is now, like 8 years later.
Yeah.
And that has me excited because it's finally in a place where a lot more people are trying it out. A lot more people are having success with it. And you know, it's the era of 3D is still, I think, in the future. If it's not now, I think soon, so people will start trying it.
And I just know you, like, if we talk about people in real life that I have met, you're the only one that I know that is flying 3D. And when I saw you flying recently on social media, first I thought, fuck, this is still as amazing as I remember. You know, like when you're inverted and you keep going and I'm like, oh, what? And then second, I thought, how come I still haven't seen no one else doing it, even on my little discovery on Instagram? Or, you know, you always end up bumping into people at parks or And they know someone, and but no one told me. Oh yeah, my mate's playing 3D, and sometimes I'm like, how is it not happening? And sometimes I'm like, why am I not trying? You know,
it's difficult because like there's one, there's two tricks.
Yeah,
you don't need 3D propellers to fly 3D.
Okay,
I made an April Fool's video, and this is honestly a detriment to the 3D community. I made an April Fool's video one year where I showed people you could take two propellers on opposite corners of your quad and just flip them upside down.
Oh, no.
And all of a sudden, you have symmetrical thrust. It's that easy. And it sounds like the most bullshitting. It sounds so bullshit. I have been told Joshua Bardwell thought I was joking and I was a complete prank. When in reality, no. The April Fool's joke is that it looks like an April Fool's joke, but it 150% works.
Yes.
And so like I have a 3-inch that I've been doing, and I have a ducted whoop that I put 3D mode on the other day just to see if it works.
Wow. Yeah, I'm curious.
It flies
about
like ass, but it works great.
That's what ducted thing flies like ass. Like let's
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like if I took the ducts off of it, it would fly great. It's honestly like because the ducts are made for a certain type of thrust, like as soon as you go upside down, the machine's just like, no.
But it does go.
Yeah, it works great. The switching and everything else, the ESC settings I have now, the beta flight's in a really good place. Like a huge shout out to Sugar and the beta flight devs, if you're listening, thank you so much. Like I cannot tell them how much it's meant to me that they have not given up on 3D mode, and that Sugar has spent several nights with me sitting down while I'm live flying. So he gets on, he's in Australia, so he'll get online at like 11 12 p.m my time.
Yeah,
I've been flying outside my window on a regular basis and there's a lit parking lot across the street that's empty at that time of night.
Yeah,
so he'll pop on and I'll get out, I'll go fly a few batteries to get logs, I'll send him logs, he'll send me information back, I'll test some new stuff out. And like I've been through this process now, it feels like trying to tune my quad, not just the Sugar and the Betaflight does, but for over the last month and a half. Mm-hmm. Like I have not put out a new flight video in over a month because I have literally been testing out new Zoe motors that I don't want to crash, a new quad tune I don't want to F up by crashing and having a bad motor or something. Mm-hmm. Like I have been trying to like push the hard end and quote unquote grind in silence this past month. But it's been the best month ever because I've flown more this past month, both in the sim and real life, than I have in the past like 3 or so months since I've been back to flying. Mm. And the sad thing is I just haven't posted content. Like the time I'd spend making content or thinking about it or doing it, now I'm just spending flying.
Yeah.
Which is a double-edged sword.
Yes, but you know, this is what you want to do at the moment, and sometimes you just have to do what you want, not what you think you should, or you know, and people are still there. I don't know, actually, that was a question that I wanted to ask you later, but I assume like people who know you and have been following you like me for years will hear, like we know you're there doing something, and then when you come back we're still here, I guess.
There was definitely was a word of like, cause I was gone for a couple of years and people definitely I think were starting to wonder / whatever, but like a month to month thing, if I haven't posted, like life is fucked, I don't know what's going on. It's different of like people, I don't know. I feel like YouTube, especially now, like I feel like you're rewarded for posting higher quality content versus posting more content. Mm. I think at like some point in time, and I hate this as a content creator, I want to make stuff people watch and I want to make stuff that people will see. Then I also have to balance that with making content that I want to make. Mm-hmm. And like finding that Venn diagram is very difficult sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I feel like at one point in time with YouTube especially, like it would punish you, quote unquote, if you didn't post content every week, or if you didn't post like, your every video every 2 days or whatever. I don't necessarily feel that's the case anymore. It's more of like if you post a really banger of a video, like a really like high level quality content,
yeah,
people will tune into it. And if you want to post just a short little something something to get it out there, there's Instagram, there's YouTube Shorts, there's a bunch of other options you can take for like doing that kind of content.
Yeah.
And so like coming back to it, I've been trying to figure out like what that looks like, because I want to do things that feel right in the moment, but I also want to try to bring some of my audience that have been with me for all these years along for that ride.
Mm-hmm.
but I also don't want to spend 10 hours editing a video when I feel like I could spend that 10 hours in the simulator getting even better flying.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I understand. So this leads to a question. It's a little bit of a stretch, but so, you know, you've been back, people have been happy, and you had been back some months ago. I lost track of time, but you know, you
about
were
3.5-4 months-ish.
Yeah, and you also had some health issues you shared with the community on YouTube, speaking of YouTube. Was like, first I want to say, how have you been since then, but also how was it to share something, you know, so harsh and personal with the community?
Super difficult, especially because, like, if you Google my name, all that comes up is the depressing shit right now. Whereas if you Googled my name a couple of years ago, you'd see a bunch of inspiring articles and shit. Mm-hmm. So that is super difficult. I feel like my everything that I've done has been defined by, like, my life being turned to shit the past 2 years, which sucks. So yeah, it's been difficult. But at the same time, it's like, I feel like you kind of... It would be a disservice to not share the hardship, because like, then people just don't understand what you're going through, and you can't find the friends and stuff that reach out to you. Like, I feel like if I didn't post what I posted, I wouldn't have had the people reach out in my life that have reached out. I wouldn't have had the friends see that personal hurt in such a way. So like, it's this double-edged sort of, like, it's good to be completely honest and open about that stuff. But at the same time, it does suck, because now I'm in a place in my life where I'm still dealing with it daily, but I'm trying to move through it, and I have more support and resources now to hopefully move through it. But I don't want to be defined by it. Like, I keep telling people, like, posting all that stuff, it felt like, you know, hitting a rock bottom socially, but it also felt like I hit rock bottom on my mountain. Yeah, at one point in time in FPV, I felt like I was on top of the fucking world. I'm on the mountain, this is fucking awesome. Making X-Class happen, making 3D happen, Rotor Riot. I've got a fucking job that I love. Like, this is fucking dope. I just had nerve ablation and I'm not in a bunch of pain. Oh my God, life is great. And then I fucking fell off that fucking mountain. Mm. And it was a tumble. It didn't just happen overnight. It was like a... And it's... Now I'm back out of base. I'm like... How do I get back up to anywhere where I was, you know, like, and I feel like I've been making those steps, like, my health wise, like, I can't fix my pain, my nerve pain, which is a whole thing I've dealt with for years. I've tried, I've had nerve ablation, I've had tons of surgeries, I've had tons of therapies, I've done pain management, I've taken every type of pain pill possible. I've been through the ringer, and what I've had to do is, quote unquote, learn to live with it. And that's been very difficult, because it means slowing down. Mm-hmm. It's hard to talk about.
That's okay.
I mean, slowing down. 1 second.
Yes.
I mean, slowing down, realizing I can't push myself like I want to, and realizing I can't do all the things I want to do in the time frames I want to do them. But it doesn't mean I have to stop. It doesn't mean that I can't keep pushing forward. It doesn't mean I can't still do amazing things in my life. I just have to be very conscious about, one, when I feel the inkling of nerve pain hitting me, I need to back the hell off and, like, take some Tylenol, lay the F down, make sure it doesn't get to a point where it's too painful and out of control. And that was the thing with pain management. I would take, like, painkillers or whatever that were prescribed to me. I would take some, like, Oxycontin. The pain would start subsiding. I would start going on with my day like nothing would happen. And then the Oxycontin would start subsiding, and I'd be even in more pain because the pain meds would literally put me in this place where I was pushing my body past where it was comfortable. And now without the pain med, I'm feeling the full effect of what my body was feeling without me realizing. And so I was constantly stuck in this loop of, like, overdoing it and, like, hurting myself more than I realized. And that sent me to the hospital like 20 different times, I think. It was like I would get in this pain spiral where my pain meds couldn't catch it. Like, nothing I could do would help. And I would start throwing up, and it was just, it was nasty. Like, it was really, really bad. And thankfully, I haven't had a nasty pain flare like that in a year and a half or so.
Okay.
But it's like, it's just this thing you constantly have to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the thing I constantly dealt with years ago that a lot of people I don't feel fully understood.
Mm.
And that's the thing. And something actually I wrote in my Venus Flytrap article. People have this perception, and I think maybe I'm part of the problem when it comes to this perception that FPV like is the easiest thing in the world as a hobby / a sport, you know, like anyone could do it. You just need to be able to fly a drone. It's so easy, right? But everything else that comes with it is such a fucking headache for so many people, from physically going out to the field to even bending over to pick up a drone if you have physical, you know, maladies you have to deal with, or even if it's the thought of going out to fly and you have social anxiety, just the thought for some people to go out the door is so much.
Mm-hmm.
So like, while the act of flying is super easy within itself, like everything else surrounding it, it can be very difficult for a lot of people. And now, especially with like regulations bearing down and everything else, it's one of the reasons why my last article that I've written is about how FPV needs to be for everybody. Like, it's great. It's amazing the way it is now, but like, we could still be better. Like, FPV can still, like, as an industry, as a hobby, as a community, like, we can always do better.
Yeah.
And I know so many people, especially because of my story, that have reached out to me talking about how hard it is for them to fly FPV, even though it's one of the easiest hobbies, quote unquote, I've ever done.
Mm.
So it's yeah, no, I don't know exactly where I was going with that, but it's
that's so good. I wanted to ask you how do you have clues, I'm sure you have, on how do we could already make it better for everybody, like what's on your mind when you think of that?
Oh, that's a deep question. That's such a deep question. Okay, there's two ends of this, because we have FPV as a community and we have FPV as an industry, and
yes,
both of them are very nascent and new. Like, they're growing and they haven't found their footing yet. FPV as an industry, not a heck of a lot of money in it compared to the greater drone industry as a whole. Even the pilots that are getting paid to do cinematic stuff, it's not like, you know, they're getting paid buku bucks. So as an industry, it's still growing. I think that it, as it grows though, it needs to be very aware of to be inclusive. And I don't even mean that in a way of like, you have to include everyone, just like try to include more than, you know, the average male pilot is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
I mean, and this is, I think, where I my biggest issue comes from, is like when I got into FPV, and this is going to sound super preachy, but fuck it, I need to sound preachy for a minute. When I got into FPV, like I saw it, because I was a female pilot that won the first AMA race. So in my mind, I'm like, there's going to be more female pilots, there's going to be more female racers, like this is going to be an inclusive sport, like it's going to be like this brand new thing that's going to be inclusive with everyone. And then over the course of like 3 years, it turned into a bunch of tech bros getting into FPV and taking over the scene,
mm-hmm.
which is good and bad. But what I've really noticed is since then is the needle has started to shift a little bit. Like a lot of the tech bros that just thought it was cool, that didn't want as passionate about it, have like shifted out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And the culture of FPV has gone almost swinging back to more where it was originally, which was the eclectic group of really cool, nerdy, intelligent people that were down to do really fun, weird, cool things with this new technology. And so I've noticed a lot more queer people in the space. I've noticed a heck of a lot more women in the space.
Yes.
Like Mach 1, holy crap. I remember when Diane was talking to me about this over a year ago, like, I'm going to do a female team. Like, that's awesome. My life sucks right now. There's no way I can be a part of this. Good luck. But then seeing the fact the team has like 20 amazing women on it, and that's just like the tip of the iceberg, the amazing female pilots that I know of now. And it's just, there's so much more visibility now and so much more, I would say, inclusiveness.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great to see. And I'm hoping that the trend is going to continue, and it's not going to be like a, like other sports where we have to play catch up, like even chess, for example. Chess has delineation between men and females, like, or men and women, right? And you have the male league and the female league, and those two can't cross over and compete.
But there's, we can.
There's been there's women champions that have been able to beat the shit off of a lot of the male champions, but they're not allowed to compete within the same league slash same scoring structures. So it just, I want to make sure that FPV doesn't go backwards societally. And, you know, and I know there's a lot of movement and stuff, and, you know, especially in sports with more inclusion and whatnot happening. And there's a lot of rhetoric going on. And the biggest thing we got to keep in mind is rhetoric. FPV should be up for everyone. It can be the inclusive thing of the future where gender, sexuality, creed, nationality does not fucking matter. And it needs to stay that way, because if we're going to have a truly a sport of the future, I feel like that should be the sport of the future. It should be something for everybody, not just the shit that we put into little boxes and things.
Yeah. Like, yeah. And it already has helped some people coming from other hobbies or sports that were unfortunately not inclusive because of the concept. So I'm going to be less vague in a second. People who were into motorsports and then had accident and they break partially their spine or they break their hips and that's it. They can't do it anymore. They can't be on a bike. They can't be in a car. And they find FPV and they're like, oh my God, FPV saved me, because I was doing stunts in real life and sometimes they miss it because they're not in the thing. But they're like, FPV is so close to it that I'm happy with FPV. And every time I hear that, I'm like, oh, it's already a sport that has helped people with new disabilities or, you know, health issues. How can we make it even more accessible? Yeah.
So on that note, and a very important note, and something I feel like the FAA and everyone else needs to really take into consideration and take to heart. Most traditional motorsports wreck the human body. Most sports in general, when played at a professional level, will wreck the human body.
Yes.
Will leave long-lasting like damage to the body from play. And FPV and drone racing in particular has the actual chance of changing that trend, where the human body is transcended beyond its capabilities, be able to fly faster and move faster than the human body was ever intended to. Without ever hurting it. And it's just like, to me, that's what it should be. And okay, this is going on a stretch. One day I want to lose all my weight. I'm 80 pounds down. I want to lose another 100 pounds. I want to lose all this weight. I want to put myself in a drone and fly it. Not going to lie. I want to be an air speeder one day.
Yes.
But at the same time, I feel like that also takes away some of the magic of what FPV is. And it's the ability to take the risk, the human risk, out of sport. And I feel like it's a double-edged sword, because like MotoGP, I'm a huge fan of MotoGP. I was a motorcyclist for the longest time before I had my health problems and couldn't ride anymore. And that's why I love FPV, is it was giving me that analog to riding a motorcycle, that adrenaline rush, that kick, that community that I was missing with the FPV community, the motorcycle community. Very similar in their tones, very similar in their vibes, their like inclusiveness, as far as we don't care where you come from or who you are. But goddamn, you ride a fucking like a Ninja 250, you squid, you know, like we hash on each other for what we fly and ride versus who we are. And to me, that is the right way to go about it in a lot of ways. And so the communities are very the same. So I found that community in FPV. And again, with motorcycles and MotoGP, you have this sport that, in MotoGP in particular, especially internationally, Island of Man, someone is dying essentially every year on the Island of Man. There's at least one serious death and at least a few crashes that severely injure riders. I've known a couple of those riders in the community back in Santa Cruz. And it's heartbreaking because in their cases, that's a sport they're passionate about and it's amazing, but I feel like half of the excitement unfortunately comes from that human element of the human body being so close to the edge of oblivion. Same thing with motor racing. And so I feel like the biggest issue right now is just getting people's minds off of humans need to be at risk for entertainment.
Yes, that's a good point.
We need to be putting big, expensive F1 style drones in the air and crashing them without people in them. That's my point. Mm-hmm. And if we do that, then, you know, things get more wild and more crazy. You can have more spectacular crashes. You can have the human body transcend norms a lot easier.
Yeah.
And so that's why I'm kind of still excited for FPV. Like, I know where it started. I know where we're at now. And I feel like, you know, we haven't seen anything yet. Like, no industry has figured itself out in under 10 years. Mm. No industry has become fully fledged in 30.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, I'm trying to give myself this thing, like, I feel like I've been in it forever, but it's just the tip of the fucking iceberg.
Yeah.
Just the fucking tip of the iceberg.
Yeah. Yeah. That's very true. And you at least being a big actor in the hobby in, how can I say, on many levels. You know, you were talking about the FAA before. You were talking about your role when it came towards regulation, helping understanding the hobby from an outside point of view. That's very admirable as well, because most people, including me, were like, oh, I wish this, I wish that, but what are we doing? Fuck all. So it's very admirable that, you know, you are able to influence or help or bring something to the table that is not just, hey, look, I'm flying and I'm good at it.
I mean, there's a point in time where I feel like I thought, so there was the protest, the UFDA crew at the time, they put on this protest in DC where we got a bunch of pilots. There were like 300 of us that marched on the FAA's headquarters in DC. It was an amazing protest. And behind the scenes, I helped write the site and, you know, helped support the event. And I was one of the people making sure no one was flying a drone or doing something stupid. And thankfully no one did, because at the time it was, you know, we were trying to fight / make our voices heard. And that unfortunately is a fight that's not going to end as regulations are looming. And from the sounds of it and from what I can gather, it's not even the FAA that wants to induce some of these regulations in the United States. It's like the intelligence community and national security agencies and stuff that are saying, hey, we want to track these things in the air. Mm-hmm. And the FAA is like, oh, I don't know how to do that. And so they just threw some shit at the wall and they're hoping it sticks. And now we have this fucking broken ass remote ID system that honestly does not fucking work whatsoever.
Yeah.
It's not going to stop a plane from seeing a drone coming. It's not going to, it's like, it's so goddamn, do you know how short Bluetooth range is? It's very fucking short. And the fact that they think this is going to fucking work for remote ID, the fact that this even passed the fucking like review of anyone within any fucking like point of power is beyond me. Mm-hmm. So like a part of me understands, and I hate to say it, I think in 10 years from now, the FAA is going to realize like what they actually need.
Yeah.
And they'll re-implement new standards for like a LoRa version that has like a module that can transmit several miles, and planes and stuff will be able to pick it up on a unified system. Mm-hmm. Like they'll come out with like a new ABS system that'll have like drones and planes on the same thing, so it can be a unified system. Because the way it is right now is fucking stupid. It doesn't make the air any safer. It doesn't make pilots any safer. It doesn't, realistically, it's not going to make the intelligence community and agencies have an easier time of doing their job. If anything, it's just going to make them have more potential targets, because there's going to be so many people not complying with it. Mm-hmm. So now all of a sudden they have all these people not complying that are going to be on some list somewhere that not gonna know what to do with.
Yeah.
So like honestly the whole thing is bullshit. I see the need for it. I just wish it was done in a way that made sense and was like actually beneficial and not just some knee-jerk reactionary bullshit.
Yeah. But I guess that's what you said, like it's so new, people don't really know what to do with it yet. And I'm trying to find comparisons, but it's early, not early, but I woke up like an hour ago, a bit more, and I was just like, I can't find.
I'm so sorry. I was ready to wait. I'm like, was like, if she needs another 30 minutes, I'm cool. I'm gonna chill. No,
I was excited. But I was trying to find parallels. But what my partner always tells me, because he's into motorsports and drifting and things like that, is that because we, quick tangent. People are used to it on the podcast. Don't worry. we my partner and I, we believe a lot in renewable energies and these kind of things. And at the moment, every time you hear about it, especially on people who are against it, they tell you all the downsides and all the things that are not working. And Sean is like, do you think the first car was running smoothly and didn't have issues and people were not dying in it?
Exactly. Like, exactly.
So as bad as it is at the moment with regulations, I think we'll have to, exactly like you said, we'll have to wait, I don't know if you said 5 or 10 years, but until we see something that makes sense. But also maybe the general public view on drones will be different in 5 to 10 years from now.
Like, so that's the thing that's really been tripping me out. I've been flying. So, okay. FAA, if you're watching, listening. Hello, my name is Zoe Stumbaugh. You have my FAA Part 107 number on your database. You can look me up. I fly safely. I do was saying, and I have not done commercial operations in many, many years. So this is, I've been flying as a hobbyist. But the biggest thing is I make sure I don't put people at risk. When I fly, I think of what is the risk? Am I going to hurt somebody? Is there, in the worst possible scenario, what could go wrong? For example, there's hills here in California that I don't want to fly because of potential fire risk. Mm-hmm. And the 0.001% chance that my rig goes down and an ESC patches up on flame, I don't want to be that person that does that. And so, like, I just don't fly it, and I'm waiting until the hills are green / a non-risk to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. So, like, there's this, I think when we're cyclists too, there's this personal, like, level of risk that you assume. And there's also this, but without motorcycles, there's this risk that you have to assume for public safety. Mm-hmm. And I think the FAA and most of the people writing the rules and regulations at the FAA don't have the slightest grasp on what safe actually means for FPV, like a 5-inch drone, mm-hmm. or even smaller. Like, mm-hmm. I don't think they have a real understanding of how safe these machines are on a day-to-day basis compared to everything else. The chances of a car today, just today, in the next 24 hours, randomly veering off a road and killing people is huge. Still have not had a single drone death from a consumer drone in the United States. Mm-hmm. But the accepted risk of cars is there, and it happens every day. And the FAA is freaking out about this risk of drones. I think they're freaking out about the year, like, you know, 10, 15 years from now when it's commercial use and we have drone deliveries and yes. thousands above us.
Yeah.
But as hobbyists and consumers, not causing a fucking problem.
Yes. Yeah.
So, like, it's really hard. I feel like it's really hard for them to, on any leg to stand on, saying that they're implementing rules and regulations for safety on the hobbyist level, because there hasn't really been a problem. Mm-hmm. And the problems that have happened have been so fucking minor compared to everything else that I could possibly think of as a hobby. Maybe besides meditating. Meditating is probably safer than FPV. Yeah, we'll give it that. But beyond that, as far as like bicycling, backgammon, mm-hmm. wrestling, football, soccer, baseball, going through all these different things, that the risk of injury to human beings is so stupidly low, mm-hmm. that for the FAA to add regulations based on safety when things are already so safe is very silly.
Yeah.
And very hard for them, in my mind, to justify, especially when they haven't spent money on any kind of actual studies, realistically, to show the safety of these things. And, you know, even doing studies on propellers to show that, you know, how dangerous is a propeller if it hits you at 50 miles an hour?
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen crazy footage of people ramming into their head and being completely fine. You know, it's
happened to me.
It's a thing. It happens. And so far, everyone that I know that's been hit in the head with a drone has lived on to tell the tale without going to the hospital. So I...
Yeah. Mine
not saying it hasn't happened. Not saying people have not gotten hurt. I'm just saying the level of risk is so extremely low that it's stupid to add regulations.
Yes. My little accident didn't even happen outdoors. I was flying in a bando and I was like, shit, there's a wall, and I ricochet, and a drone ricocheted on me. It was turned off, but you know, like even indoors, where like FAA has no, you don't answer to them. It still happened to me. So.
Now I've flown my 3D drone into myself a couple times indoors at events, but never got super hurt. It's just it's the thing, it happens.
Yes, but it makes me. It made me think when you were talking about in the long term when we have drone deliveries and things like this. So it's not really a tangent, but I need to set some context at the moment with my work. So I didn't tell you what I'm doing. I'm a photographer, video person from the ground, but we also do drone work around Melbourne in Australia. And the more we get asked by project to do drone work, the more we have to fly in restricted spaces. So we need to get authorization, you know, and with your remote pilot license and everything, the chief pilot qualifications, etc., you learn about how the airspace is divided in classes and why they've done that. And it's mainly for planes, helicopters, anything big. And then we are in our own airspace. But that airspace is huge when you think about just for us and where we usually fly as FPV pilots. And I'm not talking about long range people, which, you know, technically in Australia, you're not supposed to do long range anyway. So I'm just really talking about me going to the park and flying at 20 meters high. If we had drone deliveries, for example, why don't you just cut more our airspace into the where we don't go, and then you will have flight paths, and that's a bit of a couch analysis, yeah. But it's just
no.
Suggestions.
This, I've actually had this conversation with people. I'm like, because the FEV pilots that we, I know as a community, we know that this is going to be a future that happens, and I've had this question, like, okay, if we were to concede airspace, like, what realistically do we need as a height ceiling?
Yeah,
and 100 feet. I feel like is the height that most people are agreeing on. Like most FPV pilots, we like to do proximity. We're fucking hugging the ground.
Yes.
We don't want to be too high up. We want that nice, juicy, like flowy shit on the close up. So like, I have not heard a single person, maybe besides the really grumbly, like, I don't want no rules and regulations. I have not heard really any like sane person say above 100 feet. Like everyone's like, just give us 100 feet to the ground. If a helicopter or a plane is that close to the ground,
we have
issues. I mean, there are other things going on. If they're that close to the ground, you probably know they're there, and you probably know to stay out of their way. You know, it's just, there's some common sense that plays into this on some level. For instance, like what I've been flying, there's crop dusters, and the crop dusters will go, you know, below 400 feet sometimes, and I can hear these mother effers from a distance, and I can hear them about what altitude they're at based on the echo off the mountains and surrounding area. So when I hear them coming in around like 200, 400 feet or whatever, I come land. I'm going to bring that in. I am going to get out of their airspace. Like I hear them coming. It's not like they just sneak up on you generally.
Yes.
although sometimes apparently they do. I've had some people say they've been snuck up on by crop dusters like 50 feet off the ground.
Which, oh. Yeah.
But the thing is, like, even with remote ID the way it is now, that crop duster is not going to be able to pick up on a drone when they're flying 50 feet off the ground going 100 miles an hour. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no way you're going to be able to register that.
Yeah, yeah.
Nor do most of them even have instrumentation to see what's in the surrounding airspace.
Yeah.
So it's, yeah, that's a whole different discussion. Like, yeah. Can of worms.
But maybe there would be zones and airspaces. In Australia, if you go where no one lives, it's airspace G. Regarding of,
yeah, you know, that's like, where I'm at. So I'm airspace G up to 3,000 feet, and then above 3,000 feet becomes military airspace, which I've been very conscientious of.
Yeah, yeah, you have to. But you know, we'll see. We'll see where that goes. But the more I'm doing, because we're doing a bit of FPV at work, but most our jobs are Mavic jobs, you know. So we are trying to get permit to fly at Melbourne Airport, which we have to for a project. And, you know, once you start talking, thankfully, for being in close contact with CASA, which is the Australian FAA, they are there to help, which I really like this. I don't know about FAA, but I really like their behavior.
Well, okay, so Again, anyone from the FAA listening, I love you, first of all. You have a horrible job. I am so, so sorry that you have to be in the situation that you're into, first and foremost. I sympathize 100%
yeah.
about all the drone pilots being angry and upset at your existence. but honestly, the FAA, a lot of, they really do want to help. Like, when there's hobbyists doing something stupid, they generally, hey, stop doing the stupid thing. Mm-hmm. They're generally not looking to, like, punish people unless you're doing something ostensibly stupid and, like, you know, reckless. For instance, like, the guy that took a private plane that he owned and crashed it intentionally out in the middle of the desert and then, like, covered it up and said, no, I wasn't doing it at all.
Yeah.
That is taking a full-scale aircraft and putting it outside of your physical control in airspace that could land over someone if something was going to go completely wrong,
mm-hmm.
and doing it without authorization, everything else. And there's the instance of the Red Bull pilots that happened like a year or two ago. There was a Red Bull event where these two Red Bull pilots that are sponsored by Red Bull were going to have a plane swap. So they're going to have two Cessnas modified with these air brakes. They're going to come into full nose dives, engage the air brakes, and then jump out of the planes, and the pilots are going to switch into each other's plane.
What?
Really badass stunt. The FAA was like, yeah, no, you can't do that. That's not okay. And they tried to do it anyways without approval, and then one of the planes decided to just crash into the ground. And so it went horribly wrong, and I still haven't heard like the full report of, like, I don't know what the FAA's full decision is of that, but like within a matter of a year, we had two full scale pilots literally trashing planes for views on the internet, you know, like doing ostensibly reckless things with aircraft like that. Understandably, FAA needs to step in and say, hey, that's not okay. You know, if someone's flying an X-class rig over a field of people and, you know, they don't have, you know, proper permits or they haven't gone with, again, if people are being stupid, slap them on the wrist. But the FAA in particular needs to be very careful about, and I think they have been, about not going after the wrong people, and not trying to go after the hobbyist, especially those that are riding the line, like, you know, of hobby / posting content. Because I've heard things of, like, you know, anyone that posts content to the internet is technically contributing to a commercial entity, therefore you need to be a 107 pilot. And it's just like, no, you're doing it for fun, you're not getting paid, and while someone's making money off of it, it's not you, nor are you explicitly doing it for commercial use.
Yeah.
And I do worry that that kind of attitude and stuff might make its way into some high-strung FAA agent that just wants to put some names on their wall. So, like, that is really my biggest worry, is that someone's going to, in the FAA, take the rules and regulations, try to push it. And then what has happened before is when rules have changed, the FAA will go after somebody, say the original Entrappi, you know, Team Black Sheep back in the day with the Caparina video, where he was flying around a university. He did this power loop over a bridge / a walking bridge. And the walking bridge had a car driving underneath and a person. This is the moment the FAA said a person ducked out of the way for this wing to continue flying through the area. And then Trappi ended up getting paid for it. And that was like the first big case where the FAA was like, we don't think that meets our rules. We don't think that's within the regulations. Yeah. And this is the thing. The FAA doesn't have, like, they have the ability to fine you civilly. They do not have the ability to fine you criminally, which is a huge thing. So, like, they can hit you with penalties, but if you don't have the money, like, they ain't going to be able to do shit to you.
Yeah.
It's just really unfortunate that I make it hard to get a Part 107 or whatever. That's like the worst thing. You make it difficult to become a paid pilot, which is why I try not to do anything too stupid. but yeah, so like the big thing is like, it's just, I do worry with instances like Trappi's case, where I think there was a point in time where me and other people wanted to see Trappi fight it out versus settle out of court. And he settled. And at that time, because they settled and because the court case was never tried properly, there was never a precedent set whether the NTSB and the FAA had jurisdiction to make ruling on model aircraft and be able to actually, you know, put out regulations for this thing. And so since then, there's been this what feels like a giant, like, cloud of quote-unquote doubt. What is the FAA's actual legal authority versus what is their regulatory authority, right? Because these two things are different. And while they, yes, they have the ability to regulate within the airspace, and, you know, Congress has given them those, you know, those rights, like, stuff is not law until it's been set out in court and tried. So with these new rules and regulations, my biggest worry is that they are going to pick what they think is the best case scenario to pick someone in the community to go after, to try to solidify these rules in stone and to send a message that people need to follow them. Mm-hmm. Like, right now, things are not ready. The FAA knows they can't add remote ID into service because, one, there's not enough hardware out there for people to use. Two, there's still a struggle. People, even if there was hardware, a lot of them wouldn't be using it right away. Mm-hmm. But once the hardware's have been available for like a year or so, I feel like it's going to be a matter of the FAA no longer using a carrot, and they're going to take out the stick, and they're going to pick some unsuspecting poor soul to hit that stick against and try to make a point. And so I do worry about that. And my hope is the FAA doesn't do that and instead sees that the rules and regulations they have don't really make 100% complete sense. And the fact is there's going to be a lot of non-compliance, and it's better for them to figure out rules and regulations that are easier to comply with and not put people out of compliance, not just hobbyists, but there's a lot of commercial operators that are now in a weird spot with compliance when it comes to the FAA rules and regulations. So I'm hoping that they choose and they continue with the carrot and they don't choose the stick. Because they tried using the stick a couple times, and I feel like it's only gotten us to band together a little more and harder and push back more.
Very true. And
that was a tangent.
No, that was a good tangent. It's important for us, even in Australia. I know nothing about Europe, but Lexi knows a bit more. So when she's back on the podcast, I'll ask her. But America is usually example for other countries to follow. So, you know, that's, we know that's how it is. So we're really trying to figure out in Australia what, like, we're looking at what might come to us soon, you know. Even just the fact that sometimes we already have rules that I don't know if you have in America, like flying tethered is a thing here. Like if you're too close to airport, you have to be tethered. And I asked a few pilots when I was looking at reliable system to fly tethered, a Mavic, not FPV, because can you imagine flying tethered FPV? And they were like, I've never heard that in my life. And I'm like, okay, so maybe it's not a thing there and it's a thing here. And but yeah, we'll see where that goes.
I feel like I now have to do a video of me trying to fly tethered FPV just to see how badly that's going to end up.
Please do it. I'll watch it. Well, speaking of fun things to do or not do, how about Mach 1? So you're the latest addition to Mach 1.
Yeah, I'm excited. it's really cool and awesome to be on a team with such amazing women. So for those that don't know, Mach 1 is an all-female drone racing team, or I guess not even drone racing, it's just like FPV drone team, I guess.
Yes.
There's a lot of racers on it.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of some freestylists, too.
Yeah.
I just feel like the freestylists on the team are kind of second fiddle to the glorious racers that are taking the spotlight.
But that's okay.
But it's amazing people. So, like, one of my best friends, Angela Little A, she's on the team. Mm-hmm. And I've known her for so many years in the drone industry. And it's so cool to be on a team with her again.
Yes.
Last time we were, like, on a team together was the Misfits. And that was when we were racing on a co-ed team in IDRA's league and taking wins, which was really cool. And then there's just so many amazing people on the team. Mako Reacta, oh my god. I love Mako Ryan, she's such a sweetheart.
Yes.
Diane, the team manager, such an amazing, lovely woman. And then LaBeba, oh my god, coming back into FPV, I found LaBeba and I found Callie. Oh my, they're so fucking fast, those girls on the track. Oh my effing god.
Yes.
Like, such goals. Like, they are partially the reason I've pushed so hard in the simulators past month. They're the reason I have calluses on my thumb. I don't know if it can pop in there, but I have literally developing calluses on my thumb from flying DCL like 8 hours a day. It's just, it's really inspiring to see so many amazing like women on the same team promoting inclusivity and everything else, and just kind of supporting each other too. Like,
yeah,
that to me has been like one of the biggest like heartwarming things since I've gotten back into FPV and come back into the scene, because that's something that didn't exist a few years ago when I left.
Yeah, so and it's good to have you. When they said we're gonna have someone new, I'm like, is it Zoe? But I didn't want to write it because I'm like, if I'm wrong, maybe, you know, I don't know. People are going to be disappointed. And Mayon Hai was like, I know. And we were both busy and I didn't have time to ask her in the background. And then a few days later, I was like, yes, that was Zoe. Yeah. We were all hoping for it. So, yeah, now that's awesome.
No idea how I was even added to the team or how that happened or like what was going on or discussions behind the scene.
Oh, yeah.
I heard I was voted in. Like, I thought it was like a reverse survivor kind of thing. Like, everyone would put their vote in a ballot and like 12 people later, like, you know, an announcer would come and collect the votes, like, one vote Zoe.
Yeah.
One vote Ani Gurdy. Another vote Zoe. Like, I don't know how the process worked. I still don't. I'm just thankful to be on the team. And I'm happy and humbled to be here.
That's really good. That's awesome. And the good thing is you have a foot in racing and you have a foot in freestyle. So when we start getting a few freestyle things organized, we have tried. Like, I don't want to get into too much details, but we tried to make something happen this year. And then things happening behind the scene are slowing the process down. Nothing too dramatic, but yeah, we were trying to do some contests for people and women to you know, take part in freestyle, but it hasn't happened yet, but hoping that it will happen. And now that I know you're in the team too, I'm like, that's great, because maybe you can have
I don't want to like give away too much, but I have a Google Keep thing, and in my Google Keep list I have Mach 1 freestyle competition.
Ah, very good.
It's own little thing that's been organizing. I've been giving it some thought on how I want to do things as far as, like, I was talking about the few people, and I think I've been chosen, quote unquote.
Very nice.
For putting it on, and I'm going to do my best to do that. I have some ideas. I don't want to get into anything yet, and I guess the team has to, you know, agree on stuff and
yes,
whatnot. But like,
yeah,
speaking to the freestyle competitions I've done in the past, I've done a lot of in-person freestyle competitions. I've had a freestyle scoring system that I released publicly a long time ago.
Awesome.
I did the reverse original Rotorite Rampage freestyle competition.
Yeah.
Freestyle is a part of my life. I went from being a freestyle pilot to then trying to put on freestyle competitions.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people knew how or had any kind of inkling of a clue what to do.
Yeah.
So me seeing it as a pilot, I was like, this is what I want in a freestyle comp.
Yeah.
And so I'm thinking, if I, not the Mach 1 freestyle competition, but if I,
yes,
talking of I was to do a freestyle competition, it was going to be an online competition.
Yes.
I would probably, I don't want to speak for Mach 1 right now when saying this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I personally would like to see a freestyle competition where you have video submission round, mm-hmm, where anyone can submit a video, either simulator-based or in real life, and then those people would be voted on by a judging criteria that is publicly known,
yeah,
ahead of time. And then those selected in that would be like 12 or 24 people would be selected out of that group. Mm-hmm. And then I personally would love to have a simulator tournament with a ladder bracket where freestyle pilots go and lift off, for instance, and we have a live simulator tournament, much like the old school real life freestyle tournaments, but in the sim.
Oh.
So we use video submission to whittle down the really, really good pilots and the ones that are interested in doing a sim-based tournament.
Mm-hmm.
And then they get, you know, four rounds for their first round. So you don't get like one battery slash one chance to put down a good, you know, horse, yeah, slash a good like run. Like most freestyle skateboarding, you generally have three or four runs to be able to get a good score against all the other people that are putting down runs.
Yeah.
And then based on those, you cut half of them off and you bracket up. And that's essentially what I want to do, is I want to copy that format where we have a bracket of freestyle pilots competing. They get their four runs. They have their judging criteria. Then to make it quote unquote fair, because it's really hard to do fairness in freestyle when everything is, you know,
yeah,
subjective largely.
Yeah.
But you can still have groupthink, and the group can still think largely. So, like, the top eight best pilots are probably going to be around the top eight best pilots. Mm-hmm. The top four of them are probably going to be around the top four. So you just have those pilots compete. And so by the end of it, you know, the top four pilots will probably be putting in, like, 12-ish batteries or 12, you know, mm-hmm. possible runs. And that gives you a really good chance as a freestyle pilot, I think, to show people what you can do, get comfortable with the course, and down something that's very magical. And you know what? If you F up once and you crash, you have three more chances. You have more ability to go do what you want to go do.
Very nice.
I know as a pilot, I've been in so many freestyle competitions, quote unquote competitions, mm-hmm. where you are given a single battery to get scored on against everyone else. The finals and the starting round and the finals are the same thing.
Yeah.
And I hate that because I don't think any single pilot can do their best work on a single battery.
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to freestyle, where you're doing very complicated proximity based things. You're not following a course you've practiced a million times. You know, the vibe might be different based on how you're feeling that minute. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. So I've been giving so much thought on how I want to do like freestyle competitions, especially online ones. And try to bring back some of the magic of like the old school like freestyle competitions I got to take part of that people haven't had a chance to experience yet.
Wow. I just love that I just said freestyle comp and you were like, this is my plan.
This is my 5-point plan of how I want to do it and structure everything going forward. Yeah.
No, yes. Yes.
I think a lot about it. Like, I'm very passionate about FPV and freestyle, and especially freestyle competitions. It's one of my stupid little passions that people don't understand and I don't think we'll ever fully appreciate.
Yeah, but I love your ideas because a few years ago we tried with Little Stellar Fox and then a few other women to organize online competition. And it was pretty much one run every time, and it was in the field. There was no sim, like, we didn't think that much out of the box, to be honest.
I wasn't using you as an example, by the way. I'm not using you as an example. I had no idea that's how that was ran. I am so sorry.
No, don't worry.
Forgive me.
No, but we were based on much, like, the freestyle competitions I had been to and seen in Australia. Or heard about were pretty much what you said. Well, like one battery, you go to next round, one battery, you go to next round, or not, you know, and that's pretty much what we decided to do. We were like, you can add music or you can not have music. It was female entry only, female identifying as well. We didn't have like any issue with that. Well, we had the usual backlash.
Inclusion.
Yes.
The issues. Inclusiveness. Fuck all that bullshit.
We had backlash because men, let's say male identifying people were like, well, why is it female only? They had issues because we had sponsors for the winners, not all life sponsors. It was more like, here's a bunch of props and, you know, something like
that. I get that on some level because I this is, again, coming from the person that does not want to see pandering / mm-hmm. like, you know, to whatever, like, on the same end, it'd be kind of fucked up if there was competition that excluded women pilots from entering and stuff.
Yeah.
So like a foot on, like the shoe on the other foot, 100% understand that.
Yeah.
But I think the big thing people need to understand, it's not about exclusion in this, it's about trying to provide incentive to create more inclusion, because there's not a lot of women in FPV, there's not a lot of queer folk in FPV.
Yeah.
And I feel like, and it sucks that it has to sometimes be that way, but in order sometimes to push the needle forward, you have to quote unquote create incentives to create platforms for the people and the groups that you want to see to shine, to mm-hmm. be able to have more people see that, to want to be in those groups too. Like, it's such a fucked up thing, and I hate the fact that it's almost, I wouldn't say has to be that way, but I feel like that's kind of the way you do it. You kind of have to do that in order to promote the thing you want to promote / do the thing you want to do.
Yeah. And I think people had problems because there were prizes to win, you know, there's always fear of missing out. And I was thinking, yes, but the woman, we're asking them, so it wasn't on the sim. So our point of view with A Little Set of Fox was that these women are going out there probably breaking things like everybody would. It's more like of a reward at the end of the day for the time and effort and, you know, probably fuel you've put in the car. At least get them something when they win in exchange, you know. It was almost hard to not give everybody something, but you know, a lot of pilots then got confidence, and it was, at the end of the day, even internally we had a little chat. And it was supporting each other. We're like, oh, your last run was good. You should do more of that. Like, I was part of the judge. I didn't participate. But I was telling people, keep doing that. I really love what you did in that video. It was not even like secret competing. It was more like, let's support everybody that passes next 100%. Round so they can do better. And then they can inspire more people. But, you know, of course, negative people were really loud, but we had lots of people supporting us as well. So that's
why. So that's the thing, is I feel like those negative people may not have understood why "quote unquote" needs to exist.
Yeah.
And I feel like that is more of the issue versus it existing.
Yeah.
Because like on very surface level, it's so easy to understand their point of view, but on a deeper level, they have to understand why that exists and why it's a thing in the first place and why it's important for it to exist.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hoping more people do. And I know personally, I feel it's such a double-edged sword. I hate that it's to the point that we almost have to have female initiatives or women initiatives or queer initiatives or all these other initiatives to get more people in the sport. But it's a thing where, you know, like it's something of 40% of robotics engineers coming up now are women. There's more women are entering these fields, but FPV somehow has started, I wouldn't say regress, but it's following the same trappings of every other sport. And it's, I'm not saying it's led by a certain racing league in the United States that is on TV and has excluded women for many, many years. And the certain CEO says there's no one good enough to compete in it directly to me on the phone.
Oof.
Has nothing to do with that. It has something to do with, you know, the industry and just not seeing it, slash the culture changing and shifting to a point that it needs to shift back to a different place.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we as a community can do that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, be supportive of each other. It doesn't fucking matter who you are, your gender, your creed, whatever. You fly FPV, you're a good person. That's all that fucking matters. Just love one another at the end of the day. And, you know, try to make the world a better place, because the world sucks. Like, all of the problems in our world are created by us that I largely see. War, famine, all of the starving, heating issues, like all the homelessness, like all these things can be solvable, and can be solvable if we actually individually slash collectively do something about it.
Yeah.
And in FPV, if we collectively at least have the attitude of inclusion, maybe we'll start moving towards there without really having to do much of anything in reality.
Very true.
So that's my fucking soapbox. Oh my god, that was a large soapbox, but I had to fucking say it. It's been on my mind, because anyways, don't hate me if you're listening to me, if you're listening to this, DRL people, I'm sorry, but it's true.
The message was, love each other for fuck's sake.
Yeah, for real, love each other for fuck's sake. Include women, hire some female announcers that are actually pilots. Include women in the sport. Put them in a position of power. Something other than the fucking status quo. God damn it.
Mm. I think, you know what, the audience of the podcast, I'm confident that there are like the majority in FPV, and I'm not opposed to anything like that anyway, because that's the reality. When you speak to your friends on the field, they're like, yeah, sure. Like, they yesterday, someone messaged me about the previous
That was a message for the industry, not the community.
Exactly.
I just want to make that very clear.
Yes.
The industry is not the community, and there's a lot of people in the industry that do not spend nearly as much time or have nearly as much passion as a lot of the people in the community.
Very true. And I
sorry.
Yeah, I'm glad you clarified, because this is so true. My own experience with pilots is that, yeah, they take their kids to the field. Most of them have daughters. Yesterday, someone said, oh my God, I have my daughter as a spotter, I can't wait. Like, you know, and so most people think like us, that's a reality anyway. So it was not even a rant, or maybe towards the industry, but towards the community. As soon as you start speaking with people, you realize that we're pretty much all on
the
same page.
It's like, and that's what I'm saying too, like coming back, I've seen the growth in the community as far as everything goes, and that makes me super excited.
Mm-hmm.
It's the industry. I mean, okay, besides, I will say DCL. DCL is one of the few leagues that I've actually seen posts from people employed by DCL
purposely looking for female pilots to try to feed into their rosters on other teams and stuff. That's fucking awesome. That is inclusion on a whole different level of, like, you know, we want to find the fast women. We want to have them out there racing.
Yeah.
And I've seen several teams now with female pilots on the roster. I've seen several trans pilots on rosters. I've seen queer pilots on rosters. It's amazing to see this for me now on DCL's end. And this is a huge thing with DCL. They have, you know, teams of pilots. They have a roster of like 80 people, I think, between all the different teams, if not more.
Yeah.
Where you have like the American League, 12 people, you know. In order for drone racing to get to the point where drone racing is an actual sport, we need stables of pilots in the hundreds, not in the tens. And those hundreds of pilots need to be paid to be able to do as a full-time job. Until we get to that point, drone racing is not where it needs to be, in my opinion,
that's
as
true.
A sport.
Yeah. Yeah. And finishing or coming back to just the inclusion in the community, you know, I have a mechanical engineer background, and I'm talking like that was the year 2010s when I was doing those studies. And at the time in France, or at least in my school, it was men dominated, you know. And so it was, I don't want to talk too much about it, but we knew we were different as women. We were considered different. But even from a men perspective, I have several friends who came out as queer later, once they left the school. And I was like, oh my God, me as a woman, how can I say? Like, we were considered differently, but it was obvious and public and sort of known that we were different. But I'm like, how about hiding your identity? And I don't want the FPV community to be like this. I don't want people to be like, I can't be myself within the community. Anyway, yeah, this is a bit 100%. Of a tangent, but I'm like,
I love this tangent, go on it.
Yeah, because I could handle uni to be like that, but I don't want FPV that I love, you know, to be like this for people. I want people to be thriving in all aspects in the community.
Especially when you fly FPV, and I feel like there's this connect that happens when you really get into FPV.
Yeah.
I feel like most people, they have this connection. When you're flying, your body melts away. You're not thinking about your meat sack on the ground. You're the fucking drone in the air free. And it's this thing of like, we have to move past that shit. We have to move past all of the meat sack bullshit, because it's something that transcends what we've been doing on every other sport.
Yeah.
And that's why I still have hope is the sport of the future. In its early days. We have a long way to go.
Yeah.
And I really do hope that when we get there, it's going to be the amazing sport that I hoped it would be 8 years ago.
Love it. Well, speaking of the future, I feel like we're reaching the last segment of this episode. I wanted to talk about your current and future goals, projects, products, you know, whatever you want to talk about, like your current plans, if you have any.
Finding a stable income that I can use to pay and build and rebuild my RV and pay for a room somewhere so I don't have to live in the RV all the time. That's a big one. So I have a lot of health issues I've talked about earlier. It's been a struggle for me to find employment that works with me and my problems. It's also been a struggle just in general to live on a daily basis. So I've been trying to find projects and things that I can do to better myself. So like, I've been on this huge kick for the last 4 months. In the last 3.5 months, I've lost 80 pounds, which is a huge amount of weight. And I have a lot more weight to lose. And that's a huge part of me trying to better myself to get to, like I said, I can't fix my health problems, but I know I'll probably be dealing with less pain and life and issues in general if I weigh less. So that's one thing I can do and one thing I'm trying to do and work on. The same thing goes with like my life and everything else. Like I have the broken prop shop now. Like I'm selling the unicorn frames. I have my 3D airframe out. I'm selling 3D pre-builts. If someone wants a custom built, I have those available. If you want 3D propellers, I now have them available on my website. You know, like that's, but I know that's not going to be income. That's going to sustain me most likely in this industry. I'm just doing that because I want those parts and those items to be available for people that do want them and can pay for them. So like, that's definitely part of it. And just in general, I'm just trying to climb back up my personal Mount Rushmore. You know, like I said earlier, I fell off the mountain and I feel like I've hit a couple base camps in my life. You know, I've lost some weight, I've got my website and store set up, I'm back in the community, I'm on Mach 1, I'm pushing more flying. You know, like I'm climbing up this mountain, I'm hitting these base camps, but I know I've got a lot further to go. And on that base camp is getting the RV fixed, going to Castle Crash next year, and figuring out how I'm going to pay to get the RV fixed and pay for gas to do that and all that fun stuff. And then figuring out long term, where am I going to be working? How I would love to continue living here in Woodlake. I've been staying at a friend's house. He's been so nice to give me a room and a place to park my RV. And it's been really great to hang out with the pilot, Wu Tang. Wu Tang, if you're watching, love you, man. He's amazing. It's really cool to hang out with a pilot and a friend and whatnot. But like, I want to be able to, one, pay for this room and rent it. I want to possibly even buy a house slash this is a long-term goal. I want to start an FEV commune. out here in Woodlake, the land is fairly cheap and it's California, which is expensive, but when you can buy like 5 acres plus like a house for a couple hundred grand, not that expensive for California. And this area in particular, I want to stay in if I can. I mean, I'm down. If someone has an amazing job and offer and you want me to move, I am down to move for the right job. But if I can, I would like to stay in this area because it's so quaint and quiet. Like I have interacted with the cops multiple times. I've had good interactions with them. I've had really good interactions with all the neighbors here. Like half of the people here in the neighborhood know I fly drones. They know I'm the drone girl that lives on the corner. They know I'm that girl that flies her drone in the park down the street every other day. Like they know of me by name. I've never lived anywhere where my neighbors know me by name, let alone are cool with me flying a drone, right? And it's just a very chill environment. It's like a city of like 7,000 people, very, very comfy. So I would like to try to rebuild my life here, but I'm also open to trying to rebuild my life wherever opportunity takes me. But right now I'm just looking for opportunity, really. I need to figure stuff out, and but I'm not trying to force it. I know the right thing will come along at the right time. So
You have
that's
so
my
much
rant. I'm
insight in
sorry.
general, so much insight. If you have any advice, any, doesn't have to be just about FPV, to give to the audience to finish this episode, what do you think you would tell them?
The same advice I gave myself that I put in the AMA Museum that I stopped following a few years ago. Keep flying. Keep flying. Just keep flying. Go fly. Go enjoy it. Fuck all the regulations. Fuck all the bullshit. Screw all the politics, all of the other stuff. Just go out and fly. Enjoy it. Remember why flying is so amazing. And, you know, everything else will fall into place.
Awesome. Thank you, Zoe, for joining today. I am so happy we recorded this episode together.
I am surprised you've kept me mostly on task this entire time. It's gone an hour and a half. Most podcasts are like 2 hours with me because I cannot shut my stupid mouth.
I thought it was amazing. I loved it. I think the audience will love it, and is currently loving it. I always forget that they listen once, you know, I publish it. So I hope you guys enjoyed it. Obviously, if you want to find Zoe online, well, I guess you're probably better to tell them where to find you. Go for it.
Yeah, most social media platforms, you can find me at ZOEFPV. That is me, Zoe FPV. I'm on Instagram, YouTube. I'm even on TikTok now. I don't know why I was compelled to make a TikTok, but I made a TikTok recently and I regret every second of it. I'm on the social media platforms. Go find me. My website, brokenprop.shop or brokenprop.shop.com. I do things, coaching services, drone building. I'm out there. Hire me.
Do it. And well, that's pretty much it. Go see all the things that Zoe is doing. She's been helping the community on many levels, like we said, for many years now. And yeah, thanks for watching this episode on YouTube, you know, and thanks for listening to it on your po favorite podcast app. Give us some rating. If you didn't like this episode, don't give us rating. But And share it.
If you didn't like this episode and you're still listening, what are you even doing here?
That's so true, actually. we are on all the podcast apps, so feel free to share it with your friends. If you want to support even more, I have Patreon. This helps sustaining the video side of it. Next year, I'm planning to have a better user experience for viewers, hopefully. That's pretty much it. Thank you. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time. And in the meantime, like Zoe said, go fly.
Love you. Bye.
Bye.